It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
We're back on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by GoPSURV.com, which has a new Keystone Sports Network RV that you can check out. Really unique offering there. Comes with benefits of staying at the GoPSURV.com lot, along with some special extras like a catered barbecue meal from the 409 Tailgate Club guys, along with a 409 Tailgate Club gift box, two bottles of wine with the blue and white wine gift box, and a case of Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue light beer. To top it all off, you get your very own Keystone Sports polo shirt and hat. Greg Pickle and I, Dustin Hawksmith, currently wearing the Keystone Sports Network polo shirt.
Looking good. We got the hat here too.
Be like us when you grow up,
just
kids.
Everyone can see it. I just put it on.
To hear about this, you can reach out to Jim directly via email, info@ksnsports.net. You can also use the Contact Us button on your KSN app. And while you're on the KSN app, ask Greg a question. Use the Ask Greg button, fire him off a question. We're giving a bottle of tailgate wine to the winner of the best question. So we left off in the previous segment talking about late game. I think it's the topic going from, you know, each of the last three games, the loss to Ohio State, the loss to Michigan State, mm-hmm. the win over Indiana. And I think it's interesting that an Iowa team is on deck coming up where Penn State showed some of this in that game too. If you remember, they had almost 600 yards of offense. They were dominating in all the categories there, but they were down 19-15 late, had to string together a long 12 play drive and a minute and 42 to win that game. In that case, they finished. Finishing is an issue. You mentioned James Franklin saying in his post-game press conference, hey, look, we can't seem to win. We run the ball. It didn't work against Michigan State. They're in a position where they could put the game on ice in that game. They're up by 12 points against Indiana. They opt to throw the ball. In that case, they kill, 29 seconds and three plays because of incomplete passes. So you can't win. And so my take on it is this, and I'm curious yours too. I don't care how they move the ball. You just got to move the ball in that situation. You got to get first downs. In this situation against Indiana where there's, 4 minutes and change left, you're talking about putting the game on ice. You're talking about eliminating this team, eliminating any possible threat of a comeback, and they just couldn't do it. I think you can nitpick the play calls there about the percentage of passes, the state of the passing game, whatever. At the end of the day, Penn State's just got to find a way to move the ball in these key situations, and it doesn't matter to me if it's the run or the pass or some mixture thereof. Just get the job done. It's something they haven't done. And what they did is create a situation where things got awfully interesting late against Indiana. James Franklin phrased that Indiana kept finding ways to get back in the game. I would phrase it a little bit differently than that, that Penn State kept giving them chances to get back in the game.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, first, let's start with, you know, let's go back to the 4 minute offense. We were just talking about that a minute ago. I mean, to me, Dustin, you can sit there and say, well, what he wants to do, if some of the comments that came in after the game from fans and other media was that, at least Penn State was aggressive this time. It has nothing to do with being aggressive. It was reckless is what it was. I mean, you didn't force, you picked probably arguably now, I'm sure that someone could sit there and say this is incorrect, and maybe it is. If it is, you can let us know, but it looked like Penn State's three, or at least two of the three, were about as low percentage as you could get in terms of getting guys. And the third one, Pat Freer, or Nick Bowers, nor KJ Hamler even turned around before the ball came out. The first one, it was nowhere close to KJ Hamler. I mean, if you're going to do that, if you're going to throw, no problem, but stay in bounds. And, you know, maybe a short hitter works. Maybe it's a good time to break out a screen. You know, obviously it's easy to say in hindsight. And if one of those plays connects, you know, again, we're having a different conversation. But the problem to me is this is a trend where Penn State allows to, I mean, what in the world was going on in the final drive that Indiana scored a touchdown on? I mean, they just marched straight down the field. I understand that you're playing, you know, quote unquote, prevent defense, and you're trying to obviously, you know, not give up a big play, but Penn State kept giving up big plays over and over and over again, so much so that Indiana marches straight down the field and scores. Let's not even get into the whole. So you call a timeout because you're not aligned properly. You do recover the onside kick before the timeout, and then you get aligned properly, and you don't recover the onside kick. I get it. The onside kick's pretty much random. I understand that. But, I mean, come on. how you're in the seventh game of the season. You've been bitten by onside kicks before, so you know they spend a lot of time practicing them. How many strikes does Phil Galliano's group get? I mean, at some point, doesn't somebody have to step up and say, maybe we need to, you know, look into why these things keep happening? Because they're having problems on special teams. Obviously, the Jonathan Thomas touchdown probably wins them the game. But beyond that, Dustin, they're having problems that offset anything good that the special teams unit does.
So I think big plays from the return guys, it's part of this conversation, but there's also been some extraordinary individual efforts. That's not a preparation thing or whatever. When the ball's in KJ Hamler's hands, so I don't even think you don't have to execute perfectly to potentially get a big play. So that's part of it. The other part of the game, and again, it's another common theme that we don't have answers to, and it goes back to the 4-minute offense too, is the issue of drops. Another day where he had way too many of them. Brandon Polk, a bad drop in the end zone. That was part of, what, two or three for him. Penn State, on average, probably averaging 3, 4, 5 drops a game.
Yeah.
Through this part of the season. How far can we go without seeing progress from these guys? I think Franklin hinted after the game that there could be some changes in the rotation coming. I'm curious to see if he follows through on that. You saw Jahan Dotson late in this game. I don't know if that's a sign of things to come. Maybe we've seen – I'm curious to see what the snap counts say, but Cam Sullivan-Brown seeing a little bit more time. Matt Kippenhammer seeing a little bit more time than at the beginning of the year. Where's Justin Shorter? What's going on? What changes, if any, can we expect to see starting Iowa week?
Well, I think the first two things you have to consider, Dustin, is that number one, James Franken mentioned after the game that, you know, they had some injuries at the wide receiver position during the game. DeAndre Tompkins was not on the sideline in the second half. Juwan Johnson came out on the sideline but never had his helmet, so I don't know what's up with him. I would be leery, and at this point of the week, I'd call them both questionable at best to play against Iowa, which means some of the young guys are going to have to step up. Now, Justin Shorter, everybody wants to rush him onto the field, but at this point, clearly the pecking order would be Jahan Dotson, Daniel George, and Justin Shorter. I know that was not the recruiting rankings, but that's what it is now. And he was banged up, and it took him a little bit of time to, you know, get back into the swing of things, obviously. And he will get his time on the field, and he'll get his shot, but I don't know. I mean, you have two guys that might be hurt that are starters. I don't know how you could start Brandon Polk again. I mean, at some point, Penn State has to be willing to make – this is the one thing I think that James Franklin really struggles with, is that he's so loyal to some of these guys, older guys, coaches that have been with him for a long time, that sometimes feels like he's unwilling to make changes that need to be made. And I think that, you know, Micah Parsons should be starting on defense, and somebody else should be earning a shot to start on offense. I understand that practice has a lot to do with this, and we don't see practice. And maybe it's true that these guys are amazing in practice, and it just doesn't happen on the game field. But I have a hard time believing that, you know, somebody else at a couple of positions isn't deserving of a shot.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's brought to you by tailgatewine.com. Some awesome wines available for sale that fit a blue and white theme. An 1855 Dal Sapphire Blue, which is a blueberry wine. Old Main Pinot Grigio. You can get them at every Penn State home game. You can also get them at tailgatewine.com. If you stick around for this show, we're also going to give a bottle of tailgate wine away in the Ask Greg segment for the best question. So get onto the Keystone Sports app, fire off a question, try to win yourself a bottle as well. I want to look at on the bright side just a little bit, because there's going to be enough time to touch on some of the other questions and concerns that a lot of people have. Shaka Toney, I thought, you know, Yitor Gross Matos, those two combined for what, 6 sacks between them.
Yes.
Got pressure late, which I think, and a lot of people hope that that's something that you can maybe build around. Shaka Toney, we knew about his first step for a while. He's on a pretty good run here. Yitor Gross Matos, it was good to see him in the backfield making plays. Can that translate moving forward against some of their bigger games? You know, your Iowas, your Wisconsins, your Michigans.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think that probably that's the case. But at the same time, you know, where has this been? You know, it's not like this is the first time he's been put in the speed rush and it never has really worked out. Now, I think it's tremendous for him and for Penn State that it did. And obviously, excuse me, with Indiana on the field for 100 snaps, you talk about a tired Penn State defense. It's not like the offense is immune from getting tired as well from being out there all that time. So he went in there and beat up on some guys that were playing a lot of snaps, the tackles, obviously. And can he sustain it moving forward? That's the question. I mean, we've heard a lot about this guy and his speed rush abilities. We've never really we've seen it consistently in action, Dustin. But I think now it would be a really good time for him to showcase what he can do more consistently moving forward, because they need to take some reps off of Sharif Miller and Itur Gross-Matos. They just played too much.
So one of the things that's working on this Penn State offense is Trace McSorley running the football. It was a huge factor against Ohio State. Put him in a position where they should have won that game. Another big factor in this game, 107 yards and two touchdowns.
Uh-huh.
I just wonder where the Penn State offense would be without that. A lot of that coming on broken plays and that kind of thing. Some of it on design runs. His two touchdowns were by design. But where would the Penn State offense be without that? I don't know. You know, if you were to slap an identity, slap a label on this offense, run first, pass first, down.
They don't
downfield,
have one.
They don't. And I think that's the problem or the question, is that Trace McSorley is just trying to make things happen when there's not been a lot of support from his receivers, obviously, to this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest problem, Dustin. They don't have an identity because they can't stay on schedule. I think if they had to, I know the RPO obviously depends on what the defense does, but if you had to sit here and say this Penn State football team has an identity, or the identity that it would want to have, I think it would be a run-first team. I really, truly do. But the problem is when you have first and 10 and you drop an 8-yard pass, or you have first and 10 and you run for 2 yards and you're off schedule, that's when you really have to, you know, you get away from your identity, you get away from your tendencies, and sometimes that can be a good thing, but more often than not, it's a bad thing. And I think that's what Penn State is experiencing over the last couple of weeks here, as teams start to figure it out. You know, we talk a lot about not wanting to put things on film from a player's perspective, but the film's out there on Ricky Ronnie too, and it almost feels like opposing defensive coordinators know what Penn State's going to do before they do it. And I think that when you're in that kind of situation, you have to find a way to scheme around yourself and sort of outthink yourself a little bit to make opposing, you know, to not walk right into the traps that opposing defensive coordinators are setting for you. And they are. The other thing is that teams are now just saying, you know, I don't know if it was Joe Moorhead or Saquon Barkley, or maybe a little bit of both, but I don't recall too many times where teams felt like they could waste a defender spying Trace McSorley. It sort of feels like now that, I don't know if it's a lack of respect for Miles Sanders or for Ricky Ronnie or what, but teams have no problem sitting one guy and sometimes two right there to spy McSorley and say, go ahead, try and find someone open. It probably won't happen. Or, you know, get the ball downfield and hope somebody doesn't drop it, which could be a problem too.
If you can successfully do that, if you can have a guy spy Trace McSorley and take that broken play yardage out of it, if you can have that guy in the box to defend the run, you take away Trace McSorley's ability to scramble, you take away, you know, you take steps to take away Miles Sanders, there's a pretty good chance your defensive blueprint is going to work. And that's what we've seen at some points this year. So we're moving forward. Trace McSorley had his touchdown streak dropped at 34 games there, a drop in the end zone. Tommy Stephens got a touchdown pass. Trace McSorley didn't. We're moving on here on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Looking around the Big Ten, coming up after this.
Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light want to remind you that fall is the best season. Why? Because of football. Leaves. Fantasy football. Flannel. Beards. Tailgating. Oh yeah, and more football. Welcome to the best season ever. Grab some Labatt Blue and Labatt Blue Light. Because it's time to get undomesticated. Beer. Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York. Always enjoy responsibly.
Life gets complicated. And it only gets more complicated when things change. Which is why AAA insurance agents take the time to talk with you. So that they can help you choose the best auto and home coverage. Don't put off getting protected. Let AAA help cover what you care about. Insurance that's not just insurance. Talk to your local AAA insurance agent or visit AAA.com to learn more about AAA.
409 Tailgate Club proudly introduces our tailgate wines. Like our great sauces and rubs, you'll enjoy our wines at your next cookout, tailgate, or even as a great gift for that fan of the blue and white. Speaking of blue and white, you've got to try our award-winning Sapphire Blue, made from pure blueberry juice. Or how about our Old Main Pinot Grigio and 1855 Vidal? Go to tailgatewine.com and find all our PA preferred wines. That's tailgatewine.com.